My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big MQL man. Then he just kept saying things like, the more MQLs, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means marketing qualified lead. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the MQL man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/customer to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/customer. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
High Five Casino. High Five Casino is a social casino with real prizes and big Vegas hits at highfivecasino.com. The hottest games right from Vegas, and all winnings go straight to your bank account. Hundreds of exclusive games, free daily rewards, and come back to get free coins every 4 hours. Only at highfivecasino.com.
High Five Casino is a social casino. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details at high5casino.com.
High Five Casino.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Mark Moss Show, where we talk about the decentralized revolution each and every week. Of course, talking about the way the world is changing as we look at it through the lens of politics, finance, and technology. And of course, that technology being Bitcoin, the decentralized technology, that of course, technology always changes the world. You know, I try to bring to you some, you know, educational pieces to help you see the world a little bit differently, some of the latest breaking news, and of course, some new unique perspectives from some different guests. And so I have a returning guest, my good friend Alex Svetsky. He's in the studio with me today. Alex, and you can find him on Twitter at Svetsky Writes. And we wanted to talk about, as I said, politics, finance, and technology. And really, I'm always interested in the convergence of those three. And of course, they all drive each other. Technology seems to be the big driver of change, but politics and finance come together. And Alex, I know you've been working on a lot of Austrian economics. And Austrian economics is a school of thought, a school of thought of economics. And it used to be a big school of thought of economics. It's not really taught anymore. I've talked to many people who have graduated in the United States from with MBAs and PhDs in economics who have never even heard or never heard of Austrian economics while they were in school, amazingly. But give us some of the background on, you know, where it came from and kind of how Austrian economics emerged, and we'll kind of walk through that.
Cool. Mark, thank you for having me back, first of all. Maybe a good place to start this is sort of a little bit of background. I've been working on a publication for a number of years now called The Bitcoin Times, and the latest edition, so I was about to say this year's edition, but we're actually in 2023. So the 2022 edition was, which just came out actually, it came out over Christmas, is the Austrian edition, where I brought together some of who I think are the best minds in and around Bitcoin. So Saifedean Amos, who wrote the Bitcoin Standard, Michael Goldstein, who was one of the people who actually inspired him to get into Bitcoin, Pierre Rochard, Rahim Taghizadegan, who's actually a direct student of Hans Hermann Hoppe, and he's the last Austrian economist who's teaching in the direct Austrian school in Austria. And he was actually a physicist turned Austrian economist. So he wrote a piece in there, and Konrad Graf, who's quite a well-known early Bitcoiner, who kind of tied the concepts of Bitcoin and Austrian economics together. And anyway, I brought these people together to write a series of pieces, and one of them in there was actually written by Rahim, Hans Hermann Hoppe's student. And It's called From Bitcoin to the Austrian School and From the Austrian School to Bitcoin. And he talks a little bit about like why this school of economics is called Austrian economics. It's not because it's like Austrian. It just so happened that the founding fathers of this school of thought basically sort of came out during what's kind of known but not very well known as the Austrian Renaissance, which was kind of around like late 1800s, early 1900s. And this is sort of, you know, the two pioneering or two sort of founding fathers of this Austrian school of thought or this economic school of thought happened to be Karl Menger and Ludwig von Mises. And obviously they're both Austrian. So that's kind of what inspired the nomenclature around why we call it that. But essentially, like, I kind of call it...
And weren't a lot of them kind of huddled up in Austria at the time? Yes. And they kind of had this like little grouping of those people there in Austria, and they all kind of use these ideas and develop them together.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's kind of like, think of Silicon Valley, right? Why do we have, you know, Facebook and all these sort of technologies come out of there? You know, like you had the Xerox PARC, you had Apple, you had Intel, you had sort of like a critical mass of that type of thinking. So Vienna, back in the late 1800s, the early 1900s, was kind of like a melting pot for people that were sort of thinking about the world in a way which, you know, Rahim makes a really good argument in the piece where he calls it a bottom-up enlightenment versus what you sort of had in England and France at the time, which was a top-down kind of enforced enlightenment, which is really interesting because what you ended up getting out of France and England was democracy and socialism. And what you sort of had out of this kind of bottom-up enlightenment that came out of Austria and also, you know, its predecessor was actually the Scottish Enlightenment, where, you know, the kind of thinkers that came out of that were, you know, Edmund Burke and Adam Smith, you know, Wealth of Nations and people like that. So it's quite interesting sort of the cultures and the similarities between those sort of decentralized, emergent, bottom-up kind of philosophies and thinkings and enlightenment periods versus these top-down ones that were like the French and the English and what they sort of produced at the other end. So anyway, yeah, as you said, there was you know, a bunch of students obviously that came after Menger and Mises, and they were all obviously Austrian because that was the region they were in. And that's really what kind of, you know, pioneered that school of thought and hence the name. And, you know, what I was going to say before is I just think of it as natural economics because that's essentially what it is. You know, it's the school of economic thought that says don't touch things because you're going to break them because the economic system is more complex than what, you know, a single entity or a single mind or a single organization can define it as. So quit, you know, messing with stuff and let the market kind of figure itself out, which you and I have, you know, discussed ad nauseum in the book we wrote and, you know, as you do obviously every week on your podcast. So, you know, these guys were the founding fathers, the pioneers of this type of thinking.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, it just seems to, you kind of said natural, you know, like natural, economics and obviously Mises, who's also maybe considered one of the godfathers of that school, Ludwig von Mises, you know, he wrote the book Human Action, right? Talking about how human actions drive economics. And so you don't really break the two down, you know, between each other. Now, how would you compare Austrian economics then the traditional or probably the dominant, and maybe some people don't even know that, but the dominant economic kind of policy or theory today is Keynesian or has been born off of Keynesian. It's probably so, you know, morphed and evolved now. Maybe it's not exactly what, it's probably way worse than what Keynes even had in mind back then. But how would you kind of compare those two?
Yeah, I think a good way to think about it is, you know, I mean, you ask the average person, you know, what's the economic model of the world? They wouldn't even know who the hell Keynes is. You know, they wouldn't know that it's Keynesian or any of that, right? So the way I kind of think of it is interventionist or non-interventionist economics, right? And, you know, the interventionist school suggests that, hey, we should play with interest rates, we should, you know, make the money supply elastic, you know, we should, you know, use regulations to try and, you know, funnel money and productivity in particular directions. And the non-interventionist school, which is the Austrian school, which is what I call the natural school, just says, no, don't do any of that, because every time you make one of those decisions, there's one of the central planning decisions, you have unintended consequences downstream, which then deform the rest of the system, and you will forever be playing not only catch up, but you'll be making everything worse because you have like a, you know, one of those magnification effects. You know, yeah. you push one thing here, and 10 things happen out there. And that's really the two big schools of thought. And actually, Parker wrote a little bit about he wrote the foreword for this piece, Parker Lewis, and he was like, you know, most people just don't know what Austrian is or Keynesian or any of that sort of stuff. And sometimes, you know, we in the Bitcoin space get lost, you know, throwing those terms around. And he was like, look, let's just call it as it is. Is, you know, one school thinks that the way toward economic prosperity is to have some sort of central planners and managers, and the other school of thought says, no, let people at the edges decide. And really,
I think there's more to it than that. I mean, it certainly is that, certainly, right? But how do these central planners manage then, right? And so not only is it that now they're trying to control and tell people what to do, but they're also increasing or decreasing the money supply. So that's like a big piece of it. So it's not just like, hey, you do this kind of a thing, but they're increasing the money supply. I was just talking about in a previous segment, Amazon's laying off 17,000 people. And that's one small drop in the bucket. We got to take a break though. We're going to come back to this in a minute. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to the Mark Moss Show. I'm in the studio with Alex Svetsky. We're talking about economic theory, different economic models. It gets more exciting. Don't go away. We'll be right back in a minute.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big MQL man. Then he just kept saying things like, the more MQLs, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means marketing qualified lead. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the MQL man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/customer to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/customer. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
AI might be the most important new computer technology ever. It's storming every industry, and literally billions of dollars are being invested. So buckle up. The problem is that AI needs a lot of speed and processing power. So how do you compete without costs spiraling out of control? It's time to upgrade to the next generation of the cloud. Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is a single platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, and AI needs. OCI has 4 to 8 times the bandwidth of other clouds, offers one consistent price instead of variable regional pricing. And of course, nobody does data better than Oracle. So now you can train your AI models at twice the speed and less than half the cost of other clouds. If you want to do more and spend less, like Uber, 8x8, and Databricks Mosaic, take a free test drive of OCI at oracle.com/strategic. That's oracle.com/strategic. Oracle.com/strategic.
The following is a High Five moment from HighFiveCasino.com.
I won! Yahoo!
Private, put down your phone. This is the army.
Sarge, High Five Casino is a social casino. It's on your phone. Goes wherever you go. I win free spins, cash, prizes, free daily rewards, over 1,200 games. I won again!
Platoon, present cell phone. High Five!
High Five!
Casino!
Casino!
Win at HighFiveCasino.com!
High Five Casino is a social casino. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Conditions apply. See website for details.
High Five Casino.
All right, welcome back. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Mark Moss Show, talking about the decentralized revolution. Right now, I'm in the studio with Alex Svetsky. We're talking about Austrian economics. He's just been published an entire magazine, kind of article, full of articles on Austrian economics. That's called the Bitcoin Times. You can find him on Twitter at Svetsky Writes. But before the break, Alex, I was saying how, you know, it certainly is intervention versus non-intervention, but I think it's the way that they intervene is also important. Totally. Where Austrian school believes that you know, all wealth needs to be created first before it can be consumed, and so we must save our money, and then all saving or even credit would come from delayed gratification, as opposed to Keynesians interventionists, if you want to call it that, believe in creating or increasing the money supply. And I was just in the segment of the hour I did before you jumped on, I was talking about how Amazon's laying off 17,000 people. And this is happening all over the economy. I mean, that was just one data point, but everywhere is being laid off. And I was just talking about, I was thinking about the insanity of this, where the interventionists, the central banks, printed tens of trillions of dollars in 2020 and 2021. Mm-hmm. And dumped that money into the ecosystem. So then everybody had this extra money. They started going buying all these things, which then broke supply chains down, right? Caused all these problems. And then Amazon's like, whoa, we can't keep up with orders. So they started building all these distribution centers. They started hiring all these people. And then people are like, and then they have to pay people increased wages because they're trying to get them to back to work because the interventionists are giving them money to stay at home. So now people are getting hired at Amazon with good wages. They're feeling good. And so then the guy's like, hey, I got hired at Amazon. I have this good career. I'm making good money. Hey, wife, why don't you quit your job? Just quit your job. You stay home now and let's go buy that new car we've always wanted, right? So like now I've planned my whole life based off of that. And then all of a sudden the central planners, the interventionists want to suck the money out of the economy. And now Amazon has to lay 17,000 people off. But it's like, wait a minute. My wife just quit her job and I just bought this new car. Like, and sorry.
Yeah, this is that magnification effect.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is that magnification effect, right? You do one thing here and then 10 other things happen somewhere else. And then, of course, the problem is the greedy capitalists again. This is part of the pass the blame onto something else issue that happens.
It's also the whipsaw effect, right? So it's like if increase the money supply by 40%, and just okay, let us deal with that now. But it's no. It's let's increase it by 40% and then let's suck it back out and then let's put it back in. And so we don't even know what's ever coming. You know what I mean? So it's like we can't ever get used to it. We can't ever like adjust for it.
Well, this is actually one of the other things while we're on the Austrian economics topic. It's that, modern economists talk about this thing called the business cycle. And they're like, well, we don't know where the business cycle comes from. And they actually, a lot of people don't realize this, but you go to university and when you learn about what the business cycle comes from, no word of a lie, they call it animal spirits. They say that it just happens. And like, it's right there in front of you, what you just explained there, the whipsaw effect. It's like the business cycles are created by the very interventionism that is supposed to smooth out the business cycles. They literally create it by their own hubris and stupidity. Whereas you would, naturally get some sort of cyclical effect in an economy because, as you said, sometimes people, go out, they build a business, they get a little bit carried away, they hire too much or whatever. And, that has local effects. But when you're doing it at the central planning level, and at the mass, national global economy, national economy level or the global economy level, then you actually create these total business cycles where everything becomes correlated. So in a normal, natural, organic economy, if one industry kind of grew itself out a little bit too much, and then maybe the adjacent industries might benefit a little bit from that, but that tapers off very quickly. So if they make a mistake and blow themselves up, it's a localized effect, and the rest of the economy is pretty fine. Whereas what this interventionism does is it actually correlates everything. And now, there's businesses that are going bust that should actually be doing quite well now, but it's all the same thing now. So there's no more actual economy. It's just a function of what the interventionists are doing, how much money they're pulling into the system and how much money they're sucking out. It has nothing to do with productivity anymore or very little to do with productivity anymore, which is madness.
Yeah.
Like, why are we working? What are we doing?
Yeah. If I was going to play devil's advocate here a little bit, understanding kind of the other side of the argument, the Keynesians would, you already made the case, is their goal, their whole purpose, the Federal Reserve's purpose is kind of to smooth out those cycles. So what we'll do is the natural business cycle is there, right? We have changing wants, needs, and desires. Humans are irrational, right? You ordered too much of one product or good or whatever, but I don't want that anymore, right? And now all of a sudden you're stuck with it, right? So you have these natural business cycles. And the Keynesians believe that they could smooth that out by, well, what we'll do is we'll stimulate a little bit in the times when we need, and then we won't stimulate in the times we don't, and then we'll smooth that cycle out. That's the purpose. Mm-hmm. Versus if we kind of allowed the natural market to take its place, then we'd have much more choppy booms and busts. So what would you say to that?
Yeah, well, I mean, the proof is in the pudding is that, it really comes down to a study of complex systems and just a humility to at least recognize that if you allow things, like as I sort of said before, is like you get these natural business cycles all the time because, as you said, people are irrational, they order too much, they change their mind, whatever the case is. But when the effect is more localized, it just doesn't have a systemic effect on everything else versus the process of correlating everyone together so that when there is a problem, it actually becomes entirely systemic. It affects people and industries and sections of the economy that just shouldn't have anything to do with this. Like, and it just spreads it all. And it basically, it reminds me of the whole, 2020, we're all in this together. You know, interventionist economy puts us all in everything together for no reason. And instead of, a healthy engine in a car, for example, the radiator does its job and the carburetor does its job, the fuel injectors do their job, everything does its own job. Here, everyone is being sort of skewed to basically become a speculator of some sort. And it exacerbates the booms and it exacerbates the busts and it just stresses everyone the hell out. And instead of doing something productive with their time, like building a business, everyone's hanging on, what the hell is the interest rate going to be? What are they going to, it's at the point now, it's like, what are they hinting about doing in the future? And it's like, okay, now let's make all our decisions based on the hint of a hint of a hint,
yeah.
which is animal spirits.
Yeah, one way they do that is, I think most people, not everybody, but most people probably realize that price fixing is bad, right? If I set the price of bread, but then the bread manufacturer, the baker can't produce it for the price that it's fixed at, then he doesn't produce bread anymore. It leads to shortages. And so most people understand that. What they probably don't understand is that when the Fed fixes the price of money, they're fixing the price of everything. And so that's that coordination, that large scale coordination that you're talking about. There's a guy, Matt Stoller. He writes a article called Big Monopoly. And he just talks about these monopolies that happen all over the place. And he just wrote one talking about Ponzi hospitals and counterfeit capitalism, which is pretty interesting. I want to talk about more of that in a minute. Also, we'll get into time preference. We'll get into what the world looks like if we could implement something like this on the back end, how Bitcoin could potentially do that, and maybe the moral code for fixing this system like this. You're listening to The Mark Moss Show if you're just tuning in. I'm in the studio with Alex Svetsky. We're talking about the decentralized revolution, talking about money and economics right now. We'll be back with more in a minute. Don't go away.
The following is a high-five moment from HighFiveCasino.com.
I won! Yahoo!
Private, put down your phone. This is the army.
Sort. High Five Casino is a social casino. It's on your phone. Goes wherever you go. I win free spins, cash, prizes, free daily rewards, over 1,200 games. I won again!
Platoon, present cell phone. High Five!
High Five!
Casino!
Casino!
Win at HighFiveCasino.com!
High Five Casino is a social casino. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Conditions apply. See website for details.
High Five Casino.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
Paid by Up-Level Rewards. Paid participation required. Actor portrayal.
Attention all listeners. Are you ready to earn $750? Well, get ready because I'm about to introduce you to Get750.com, the ultimate way to earn. Here's the scoop. Instead of just streaming shows or playing games on your phone for nothing, you have the chance to earn additional cash. That's right. From trying out new subscriptions to playing your favorite mobile games, you can get extra cash in your pocket. Simply sign up at get750.com and follow the instructions to start earning immediately. So, what are you waiting for? Turn your favorite apps into real cash with get750.com. Don't miss out on this incredible opportunity to earn rewards for things you're already doing on your phone. Check out get750.com today. That's right. Get started right now at get750.com. Just go to get750.com or Google Get My 750 Cash. Follow the simple instructions and get your $750. That's get750.com. Get750.com.
All right, welcome back. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Mark Moss Show. We're talking about the decentralized revolution, and I'm in the studio with Alex Svetsky. You can find him on Twitter, at SvetskyWrites. He's the author of the Bitcoin Times, which is a really cool publication. He's put together a bunch of Austrian articles, Austrian economics. So we're talking about economics. You know, before the break, I'd kind of hinted about this Substack article I got from Matt Stoller, and it's called Big. And he was talking about how every issue is talking about these monopolies. And he was talking about how he calls it Ponzi hospitals and counterfeit capitalism. And he was talking about how FTX is nothing new, how it's just like WeWork was, where you get this guy wearing a t-shirt that everyone thinks is a genius. And he creates a story, this genius creates a story as to why he's losing money, but why it's a good thing because he's getting growth and blah, blah, blah. But it's only possible because of this counterfeit capitalism, this Ponzi finance, right? WeWork continued to give them money to get these building leases that were worth more than the buildings themselves, which were insane, or like FTX. They were talking about how it's happening with hospitals. And so it's allowed these private equity companies now to start going and buying up all these hospitals, but they don't know how to run them. They're running them horrible. Now the hospitals are going out of business. They own the land. And he was saying that even like they gave the loans to the hospitals are paying on the land, but when the hospitals go broke and can't pay, they'll loan the hospital money to keep making payments. So then they can show to their shareholders and prospective investors, hey, we've never had a payment missed. We're still growing, even though they're actually funding the money in. And he was talking about how it's only possible because of this counterfeit capitalism, only possible because the interventionists created all this free money, gave it to them, and how it's distorting things and causing problems where now hospital care has gone down. Hospitals are going to business. He was blaming this whole LastPass hack that recently happened on this same thing where private equity came in, took over the business. They don't know how to run it, ran to the ground, caused the hack, whatever. So I think there's definitely a good case for that. Let's go. This is the opposite of time preference. And I think this is a big piece to hit on because, as I already kind of made the case, that under Austrian economics or natural law, it's like I've expended my energy. And if I decide not to expend that energy today, I could store it and I could use it later. So I'm delaying the gratification of using that later versus the interventionalists, the Keynesians, want to just create the money today and we'll just pull it from the future. And so I have this instant gratification. Mm-hmm. And that really starts to distort everything, including every choice that we make, including relationships, health, et cetera, right?
Totally. So I'm going to read a passage here. It's a small paragraph from Saifedean's article in the Bitcoin Times. It says, it's called A Primer on Time Preference. And the first paragraph is, the scarcity of time is the starting point of all economic choice. The scarcity of time forces man to choose between alternatives at all points in his life, and it means that every decision has an opportunity cost. Even with no restraint on the amount of resources available, an individual's choice of how to spend their time results in the elimination of all other choices for which he could have used the time. Economizing time is therefore unique because time passes and cannot be stopped or reversed. So, you know, I've heard the argument in the past, you know, people like, oh, you know, will we ever live in a post-capitalist society where, you know, we have the Star Trek machine that, you know, creates anything that we want at any point in time? And my answer is, well, no, because that's still not a society post-time, right? Like the only time we'll have a post-capitalist society is when time doesn't exist anymore. Because even if you could create everything that you wanted right now, you could only use what you wanted in place of something else that you may have also wanted, but there's a priority. So time is the ultimate sort of, you know, the ultimate equalizer, so to speak. And, you know, what time preference is for people who may have either not heard the term or heard the term and not really understood it is, it's the difference in how you value the future in relation to the present, right? So everyone always has a time preference, which is it's more than one, basically. So the lowest time preference you can get to is one. So if we do a quick example, is that the present is always worth more than the future because the future has some level of uncertainty. You don't know what's going to happen down the track. So if you could eat today, like food right now is worth more than the potential of food tomorrow, and is definitely worth more than the potential of food 100 days from now, and it's for certain worth more than the potential of food 1,000 days from now. So the longer you go out, the more the present is sort of valuable in relation to it. Now, civilization, you can argue, is a function of how well or how much you can value the future in relation to the present. Because the more you can value the future, the more longer term plans you can make, the more things you can do. And then that's when you build things, you create things. Like if everything was just now, you would never build anything. You'd never build a house. You'd never learn to build a fishing rod, for example, to fish for more fish. So all of these things require the lowering of one's time preference in order to increase productivity and better the future, essentially. Now, what we do, as you said, is like when we pull from the future by intervening, by printing money, by creating credit out of nowhere, and all this sort of Ponzi-nomics, basically, is we screw up that calculation. And we make the future more uncertain. And in making the future more uncertain, it means we value the present way more in relation to the uncertain future. And we do everything short-termist in the way we do stuff. We spend more, we buy cheap crap, we are gambling on every investment that we can sort of think of. Companies like what you mentioned with the hospitals is like they have all this free money. So the money's worthless tomorrow, so let's just throw it into stupid ideas and fund our own debt, which is insane. But this sort of
we eat junk food because it tastes good right now, even though we know it's going to cause long-term health effects.
Correct. It skews everything, and I think time preference is kind of like the master knob, essentially. It's the master dial for the maturity of human beings at an individual level and civilization at a macro level. Like if the time preference is really, really, really low, you have extreme maturity. If the time preference is really, 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 really high, you have extreme immaturity. And that's really the dial. And I think what we've done to the world with all this interventionism is we've made the future so uncertain that we've made everybody and everything immature. And we're just shooting from the hip, hoping for the best.
Is it a chicken or the egg, though? Right? Like, is it because we naturally we want we talk about capitalism being natural, right? So naturally, we're going to try to get more for less, right? We're going to try to be more efficient. We want we want to speed things up, and so naturally, we kind of want to get things faster, and that causes us to have the short term thinking in all areas of our life, including now we'd found a way to short term hack into our money. Or is it because mm-hmm. the money creation then gave us that thought, chicken or the egg kind of a thing?
Yeah, it is an interesting one. I think the it's one where if you can separate the consequence from the act, I don't know which one is the chicken or the egg here, but you create a situation where...
Well, does the money cause us to have short-term thinking and everything, or is it because we have short-term thinking, we've created a shortcut to money?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think they feed on each other, honestly, and then somewhere along the line, we end up in a situation where we create a way to have short-term thinking, have the benefit of it, and then have somebody else pay for it. So then you end up stuck on this drug of, like economic heroin, and it just feels good for the moment, feels good, and you don't feel the consequence until you die.
Yeah. We gotta take a quick break. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Mark Moss Show. We talk about the decentralized revolution. We're talking about money, because money is, what makes the world go around. Talking about the different types of economics, and I want to talk more. We have Alex Fetsky in the studio. I want to talk more when we come back about Now that we've understood this time preference, talk more about this moral code for us, moral code for leaders in the future, and what that future looks like. So we're going to be back with that and more in a minute. You don't want to miss this part. It brings it all together. We'll be back. Don't go away.
The following is a High Five moment from HighFiveCasino.com.
Welcome to Burger Yippee. Would you like a hot apple pie today?
Yes, yes, yeah, I won! Woohoo!
So that's a yes on the apple pie?
I just went big time playing High Five Casino on my phone. Real cash prizes, free daily rewards, over 1,200 games. Yeah!
So yes or no on the apple pie?
Woo! I won again!
I'll take that as a yes. Drive around.
Have you had your High Five moment today? Only at HighFiveCasino.com.
High Five Casino is a social casino. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Conditions apply. See website for details.
High Five Casino.
Paid by Up-Level Rewards. Paid participation required. Actor portrayal.
Attention all listeners. Are you ready to earn $750? Well, get ready, because I'm about to introduce you to Get750.com, the ultimate way to earn. Here's the scoop. Instead of just streaming shows or playing games on your phone for nothing, you have the chance to earn additional cash. That's right. From trying out new subscriptions to playing your favorite mobile games, you can get extra cash in your pocket. Simply sign up at Get750.com and follow the instructions to start earning immediately. So, what are you waiting for? Turn your favorite apps into real cash with Get750.com. Don't miss out on this incredible opportunity to earn rewards for things you're already doing on your phone. Check out Get750.com today. That's right. Get started right now at Get750.com. Just go to Get750.com or Google Get My 750 cash. Follow the simple instructions and get your $750. That's get750.com. Get750.com.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cash back on purchases. And pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
All right, welcome back. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Mark Moss Show. We're talking about the decentralized revolution, and specifically, we're talking about economics. We're talking about money. We're talking about long-time perspective or preference, high-time preference, low-time preference. I'm in the studio with Alex Fetsky. He's the author of The Bitcoin Times, and you can find him on Twitter, at Svetsky Writes. Now, Alex, I kind of asked you about this chicken or the egg, and you know, like you said, they probably feed on each other. I think that's probably the best case. But let's say that, you know, if we can, you know, fix the money, fix the world, so to speak. So this money, maybe it's not the root of the cause, but it certainly accelerates and feeds into this kind of short-time perspective. So if we could fix that, where these interventionists don't have the ability to just create all this money from thin air, we went to a sound money, a fixed money supply like Bitcoin, and then that slows down our perspective on money, then you believe that then that probably helps start changing the perspective on all other areas of our life?
I think so. So like, if you think about all the ancient teachings, and if not just ancient, like even the Austrian teachings, like all this sort of stuff, they try and educate human beings to be more mature, more moral, more honorable. And a lot of these things sort of revolve around behaving like an adult, thinking about the future, not just about the present, right? Like they sort of, all of these great stories, these great philosophies, whether it's Stoicism or Christianity or any of these things, they all kind of try and impart these lessons on human beings. But as we sort of identified, is like, you know, human beings have a tendency to want to do things the easy way and, you know, get the shortcut, you know, and if they don't feel the consequence of the shortcut, then they're oblivious to, you know, whether what they did was, you know, right or wrong or indifferent. Now, by fixing the money, what you end up doing is you create a new environment in which, at least the hypothesis here is that if you make a poor economic choice, the consequence is far more localized, and therefore you get feedback, right? And we talked about this in the Uncommunist Manifesto when we wrote that, is like the faster the feedback loop, or the closer the consequence, you know, to the actor, the more likely they are to adapt and change in order to survive. And you know, my hypothesis in my article in the Bitcoin Times was that Bitcoin kind of makes what the Austrians and, you know, prudent schools of thought all throughout history have sort of suggested. I think Bitcoin kind of codifies it in the economy by, you know, making the money fixed and, you know, not allowing any bailouts through printing, you know, more money or all that sort of stuff. And I actually think that what will happen is smart people, good operators, will actually orient themselves in such a way that the teachings of, you know, Austrian economics and all that sort of stuff don't just have to call upon people's like honor and intelligence and maturity to behave the right way. There's actually going to be an economic benefit to behaving the right way, because you're less likely to blow yourself up, because, you know, your purchasing power is increasing just purely by function of being a responsible adult and saving, you know. So it kind of changes that game a little bit. So
that's an interesting point. I've referenced many times Lenin's quote where he said that you know, destroy capitalism, debauch the currency through inflation, you steal, and then the best way to get rich is through gambling and theft, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of where we're at, is gambling and theft. And so then you just start looking at your whole life that way, and you're just trying to thieve and steal and gamble and trick everything, kind of a thing. But in regards to that last piece, you were talking about our savings. And so, like, if we did have this kind of like fixed money supply and our savings were sound, that really starts to change a lot of things, right? Because one, we have to continually work harder to try to offset the theft of inflation. And now that extra time we might save could go into building better relationships or better education or knowledge and becoming more mature. Because you're saying, like, the argument or maybe the problem is that we're not maturing enough. And as you were saying that, I was thinking back to the chicken or the egg dilemma. You don't have kids, I do. And kids at 1 and 2 years old have very short time preference. It wasn't the money, it wasn't fiat money that taught them that. They're born with that, right? And it's through the act of maturing that you learn to delay the gratification. So to me, and as I started kind of thinking about that, you used the word maturity, and it kind of brought that into perspective. But, you know, I was on this Twitter Spaces recently, and we started getting kind of into, you know, what does the future of money look like on Bitcoin? And they're trying to explain how, you know, I think there could be some fractional reserve, and there'd be, you know, people would loan you money against your Bitcoin, and you can get some yield this way, and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, if your money held value and actually bought you more goods and services in the future than less, I wouldn't need to be investing it, and I wouldn't need to be earning yield. And so, like, you're trying to, like, think of how it could be used in context of what we have today. But if my money bought me more goods and services, then I just save my money and I just keep focusing on wealth creation instead of this whole investing complex, you know, Wall Street industrial complex that's been built up, kind of a thing.
I agree. One of the best articles that was ever written about this concept is called The Great Definancialization, which was written by Parker Lewis in 2020. He actually wrote it for edition 3 of the Bitcoin Times. It was one of my favorite ever. And it was actually around the first time you and I did a podcast, actually. I remember I was in Germany when he wrote the article, and I was in Germany when we did our first podcast together. But he basically, it's called The Great Definancialization, and the premise of the article is that while people think that, you know, Bitcoin's going to, you know, increase financialization of the world and everything, is like, no. It's actually going to simplify all of this excess, you know, baggage and confusion that comes with the financial world today, because we are trying to find ways basically not to become poor. Like, that's literally all these machinations, like investing and trading and, like, you know, millions and millions upon millions derivatives products and all this sort of stuff. It's all hot air, it's all fluff, and it's all kind of like a roundabout way to try and offset the damage that basically monetary inflation does to the world. And it's like, you know, let's just, you know, Alexander the Great and the Gordian knot, right? You know, they said you will become you know, whatever it was, like, king of this region, if you can untie the knot before the sun goes down. And he looks at the knot, looks at the sun, pulls out his sword, and he just cut the knot in half, right? So, like, let's just, you know, Bitcoin is cutting the Gordian knot of this tangle of crap. You know, you've got people talking about, like, oh, let's, like, you know, open up regulations a little bit. It's like, no, let's just cut the crap and, you know, let the chips fall, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's something I talk to my kids a lot about, specifically my oldest daughter, and she's kind of wrestling with this, like, what's she going to do, and does she want to take class at university? I'm like, what is it that you ultimately want? And I'm like, what's just the quickest way to get there? Like, do you need to go through this mm-hmm. existing system to get to where you mm-hmm. want to go? Mm-hmm. In my opinion, from where I'm at, the answer is no. And kind of to your point, like, do you need to sit there and untie the knot, or do you just cut it? You know, a conversation I've had many times with some of the people I'll leave unnamed for now, but you know, they talk about like, well, how does it fix the euro dollar market? Like, that's a question I've been asked a bunch of times, right? Because like, we have this huge problem with all these offshore dollars, and that's really where the shortage is happening. The Fed doesn't have enough firepower to actually keep the dollars, enough dollars in supply because of what's happened in the euro dollar market, and then now the yield curves are inverting. And how does it fix that? And I'm like, it doesn't. Like, it just does away with the whole need for that in the first place. Like, you know, so it's kind of like cutting the knot, so to speak. We got about 30 or 45 seconds left. Anything else you want to throw out before we wrap this up?
No, other than like, if people found this interesting and they want to dig into this a little bit further, like bitcointimes.io is where they can pick up a copy of the Bitcoin Times. So there's 5 editions, the latest being the Austrian one, I think is, you know, really, 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 really special. So, you know, people want to support and check that out, by all means. But I hope they enjoyed this history and economics lesson.
Yeah, hopefully. And I would really encourage everyone to just dig into this a little bit. Get the Bitcoin Times. I have every issue that's come out. Check out Mises.org as well. Lots of good articles on Mises as well. Check out the book that we wrote, The Uncommunist Manifesto. You can get that on Amazon. Just search Uncommunist Manifesto. And check that out as well. And man, keep digging into this. It can change not just your life, but change the world. You've been listening to The Mark Ma Show. We're talking about the decentralized revolution in the studio with Alex Fetsky. And that's what we got. Thanks for listening.
High Five Casino.
High Five Casino is a social casino with real prizes and big Vegas hits at highfivecasino.com. The hottest games right from Vegas, and all winnings go straight to your bank account. Hundreds of exclusive games, free daily rewards, and come back to get free coins every 4 hours. Only at highfivecasino.com.
High Five Casino is a social casino. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details at high5casino.com.
High Five Casino.
You wouldn't expect to hear that we're America's third best city for beer like this one. Or home to vibes like this. And this. It might surprise you that we're top 10 for immersive art that's like...
Whoa.
And...
Hmm.
Not to mention, we have one of the top zoos in the country. So can a city with the country's best pro soccer team, ranking as a top culinary destination in the world, be in your own backyard? Yes, Columbus. Plan your summer at experiencecolumbus.com/summer.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.